Hi, Henry Ryan here, President of Christian Leaders Institute, and today we have with us Rick Adamy of Adamy Evaluation Advisors, and we're going to talk about enterprise. And this is this dream, this passion, who, like the Apostle Paul, both proclaimed ministry, but also, as a tent maker, had to engage in enterprise. So, Rick, I'm so glad you're with us today. I know you've spent your life in enterprise, but also have a soft spot for the Lord in ministry. So this is a privilege to have you here and to talk about some of the things you've learned over the years about enterprise and enterprises and how to do well. So welcome to Christian Leaders Institute.
Thank you, Henry. My pleasure. It's good to be here.
Yeah, let's just start out with like sort of a intellectual topic. We're a ministry trained school, so we like to think as well as like to get practical principles. How would you define wisdom?
I thought about that, and I actually looked in Webster's to see what if Webster's definition of it jived with my definition.
Okay.
And Webster defines it as making the best of knowledge, experience, and understanding.
Interesting.
So I dissected that and first looked at knowledge and then looked at experience and looked at understanding and thought, well, that really makes a lot of sense because knowledge is what you pick up in book work along
right.
the way, what we learned in school and
yep.
the technical training that you got someplace to do your job. But then experience is taking that knowledge and applying it to some use,
right?
Whether it's in the for-profit world or the not-for-profit world. And then understanding is being able to reach conclusions and find solutions based on the knowledge and experience that you've gained.
Okay.
So in my thinking, wisdom is the result of experiencing all three of those and at some point. And then someone once said that knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. And I'll have some more thoughts on that idea.
Okay.
That knowledge speaks, and we've all heard people speak on a variety of topics, hopefully knowledgeably, not always, but
right.
hopefully most of the time knowledgeably.
Right.
But wisdom listens. And it reminded me of something from the book of Job. With the ancient is wisdom, and in length of days, understanding.
I see.
So it's almost like Webster read that chapter in Job to come up with
yeah.
his definition of wisdom. And on the listening side, and I'll have more to say on this because I think this is a key to understanding wisdom. My grandfather used to say to me, you learn a lot more with your mouth closed than you do with your mouth open.
Right.
And at the time, I was a young kid and didn't really pay a lot of attention to that. And thought, well, I'm not really sure what he's talking about. But the older I got, the more experience I got, it became clear to me that was his wisdom that he was passing on to me.
Interesting. Now, when you think about applying wisdom, you probably have been involved with lots of enterprises. I'm curious, maybe you can share with some of the students some of the enterprises that you've been involved with.
I've been fortunate to lead a number of enterprises over the years, both in the business world and in the nonprofit world. I started two companies, sold the first company, and the second of those companies I'm still somewhat involved with, even though I'm semi-retired. Others are running that business now, but I still have some involvement. So those were two business enterprises that I've started and led. But on the nonprofit side, I've been involved on boards and board chair of probably four or five organizations over the years. So probably in total six or seven enterprises that I've been involved in leading over the last 30 or 40 years.
Enterprise itself, what excites you about enterprise? Like the kind of that Apostle Paul attitude of, you know, if I'm in ministry, but I'm still to be enterprising. If I'm having to work and then do ministry, there's that enterprising side, that positive ability to say, Lord, I am a, you know, creation of God. I am called to subdue the earth and just be enterprising. What excites you about enterprise?
Well, I'm not sure if I've subdued anybody lately, but
well, that's an old King James word. It actually means to be the steward of.
I understand.
Yeah,
I just wrote that.
That's a good one, though.
But what excites me about an enterprise is the ability to take a bunch of parts of something, take people and computers and office space and ideas, and put it all together to come up with something that is greater than the sum of all of those parts.
Ooh, interesting.
So I think you would call that synergies. The synergy is what you get when the sum of all of the parts is less than the result of putting all of these ingredients together. And that's what excites me about getting an organization, because the people by themselves are just, they're people, they have talents, but until you combine those talents with the rest of the resources that you have available, then you get an enterprise, and that enterprise is able to focus on getting something done.
Now think about this, everybody. What Rick Adamy is saying here. Okay, so you have a marriage. In a sense, there's an enterprise aspect that two are better than one.
Good example.
Okay. Yeah. Or you have a family, and that family, or you have a little house church, a small group, and your goal is that little house church has more impact than just if one person alone is alone. That together, and if you have a church, or you have you start a ministry, or you're in the corporate world, you're working with associates. That aspect of increasing impact through multiplying effort, that's an interesting definition. I don't really think I've heard it put that way before, Rick. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's good. I'm like stuck on this, students. You see this. So it's like all of a sudden it hit the president a certain way, and I think to myself at the Christian Leaders Institute, what do? We're about mobilizing you in your enterprise to make more impact, to raise up more revival leaders. Anyway, I'm having a little bit of a moment here, but let's move on. What are some of the aha moments that you've experienced over your years of doing enterprise?
There have been dozens of them, Henry, but a few of them came to mind. One of the early ones that I had a long time ago was reading Dale Carnegie on somebody's recommendation, probably after college, but still early in my career. I was probably early to mid-20s at that point. And that made it clear to me how important it was to understand people and to be able to serve the people's needs, if they were your employees, your coworkers, your family. And it also fed into that idea of being a better listener than just a talker.
Right.
And I think the people that practice the principles of Dale Carnegie are more apt to be successful leaders, and that sunk into me. People react more favorably when you pay attention to them, take an interest in them,
right,
than if you just treat them as a cog in a wheel.
Right.
Another thing that struck me was the importance of specializing. And specializing to me just means being particularly good at a certain thing.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't, and that's whether you're in the business world, whether you're in the nonprofit world, whether you're in service, whether you're in manufacturing. I've given people this advice over the years because it served me well. Somebody gave me this advice. Find something, even if it's just a small thing, that you're better at than other people, because then when the opportunity comes up for that need, people will you out.
Right.
I worked at a huge international accounting firm in Detroit right out of college, right after I finished grad school. And we were serving as auditors for General Motors and Dow Chemical, very big companies. But the one thing that I learned to do was payroll tax returns.
Okay.
Because nobody else in the 140 people in the office, and nobody knew how to do a payroll tax return.
Okay.
So when they needed someone to understand payroll taxes, they would come to me. I had partners with 10, 20 years of seniority that would come to me because I was the only one in the office that knew how to do payroll tax returns.
Right.
So that showed me the importance of getting a little niche and doing something right. better than anybody else. That was an aha moment.
Before you go into your next, so think about that, ministry training leaders. A lot of times when you're working in a business or you're working for an employer or you're starting a business or whatever, to see that thing that God gifted you to be, or to see an opportunity that you know you could learn and no one else is wanting to learn it, you actually bring a different understanding of value to the table.
That's right.
And that is, you now become more needed. Often salaries can be increased because that person is more needed in the organization. But a lot of times what we think is, oh, that's not my job. That somebody else should take care of that. But you're saying to actually look for how you can serve when other people don't even want to necessarily do it.
Yes. Yes. And to take that a step further, learning to seek excellence.
Okay.
And everything that you do, whether it's that niche that you decided to specialize in, the thing that nobody else does, or whether it's just your day-to-day work, learning to seek excellence. Somebody said not long ago, we need to internalize the idea of excellence. Not many people spend a lot of time trying to be excellent. We're satisfied with doing okay. We're satisfied right. with average.
Hmm.
So I like that quote.
That's interesting. Wow.
A couple of other aha moments. Somebody told me years ago to make sure that when I was hiring staff, we were always hiring people, one or two people a year, to hire people that were smarter than I was. And I thought, well, why would I want to do that?
Yeah,
I want to be
your position, right?
I want to be the smartest guy in the room. I don't want to hire people that are smarter than me.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point they were making, which soon became clear, is that the organization will only go so far with you as the leader if you don't have people that are pretty smart.
Right.
And you will never be able to retire. You will have to die with your boots on if you don't have somebody to take your place. And I've seen this happen particularly in service organizations and professional service organizations, small to mid-sized companies. They're all built around one person.
Right.
And he or she has charismatic abilities,
right.
but then when something happens to them and they can no longer lead, then there's nobody to replace them.
Right. So a ha-ha moment is you are replaceable. Get that in your mind and then start setting up an organization or enterprise that doesn't anemically be dependent on you because
exactly.
you have locked it into a spot where it can't be reproduced.
And we are all replaceable.
Yes.
So get used to it. Get over it. get past that.
Yeah, it's called flesh and blood, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
Any other aha moments?
But the last one I'm going to bring up has to do with listening. And this is pretty late in my career. This happened just maybe 15, 20 years ago. I had a client, the number two person in the organization who was the chief financial officer, not a large company, maybe 40 or 50 employees. She called me one day and said, we've got some things going on inside the company. I would like to talk with you about that and get your thoughts on how we deal with some of these internal issues. So
right.
I booked a couple of hours and said, sure, come on in. Her name is Karen. So Karen and I sat down, and I asked her what those issues were. And then it was like I wound up a clock, and
okay.
she just kept on going. She was a soft-spoken person.
Right, right.
It wasn't like she just rattled.
Yeah.
But she went on very coherently. And I would stop periodically to ask her a question,
right.
but I never gave her any answers. For 2 hours we sat there, and I kept asking her questions, listening to what she was saying, really focusing on the listening
right.
and asking questions, and I never once answered a question, never once gave her advice, you should do this. I don't
right.
think I ever even said, well, based on my experience,
yeah,
I've
yeah,
seen
yeah.
others do this. And 2 hours later, she took a deep breath and said, this has been just great, Rick. I have learned so much here today, and I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with me. This has really helped clarify. I can go back and I can work with the boss now, and I think we can get a lot of these things straightened out. And they did, and the organization has flourished, and is still in business today. So I thought about that meeting. I thought about that, and I've told that story to many other people about the importance of listening, and that one really sunk in for me.
You know, the People Smart in Ministry class has become one of the most recognized classes for personal impact, and there's various sections on listening, and you mentioned Dale Carnegie, and those kind of leaders are featured in that class. It is called People Smart for Ministry, and I know many of you have done that, and many of you have said that's like the hardest class, harder than theology. And the reason they have mentioned that is because it's simple to understand, but not necessarily difficult to always do.
You're right.
So a lot of these aha moments take a little bit of self-discipline.
Especially the listening part. We're not all natural-born listeners.
Right.
Entrepreneurs in particular are not usually natural-born listeners. They're natural-born doers and talkers. So it takes a while.
Yeah. I want to change gears just here a little bit and just talk about, like, pick up on that wisdom side in our remaining time. What role does a teachable spirit have in moving forward in enterprise and being sustainable and reproducible? What does a teachable spirit do for that?
I think it goes back to the listening skills, right? I haven't seen a lot of successful leaders, maybe none, that did not have that teachable spirit. If they aren't willing to continue to learn, continue to be teachable, to be open to other people's ideas, and truly listen and react to that, then I don't see how you can be a good leader. And the best leaders that I have seen, this you can tell by the way they operate that is their mantra.
Okay.
And that's more of a, I think there's more of that going on today. More young people are used to the idea of being able to participate in an organization, and if you run it as a dictatorship, then you're going to lose good people. You're not going to get the best out of people if you're not listening to their needs and meeting their needs.
Now, process this question in failure. Have you ever actually looked failure in the eye and that teachable spirit, that resilience, where you ask yourself, transparently, failure is very difficult to deal with. What's your journey in failure?
It would take a long time for me to list all the areas where,
where
I have failed over the years. Somebody said to me, well, you only have to be right 51% of the time. Well, I would hope that for most leaders, the batting average is a little higher than 500. But there's one failure that stands out in my mind because I've learned so much from it, and that really got me to where the organization became. Two organizations became after that. In 1990, I was an accounting firm of, I don't know, 7 or 8 people.
Okay.
And we were approached by a larger accounting firm, 25 or 30 people, to merge into their firm. And I decided to do that. I thought that the skill set that they had combined with the skill set that we had would better serve all of our clients and we'd be in a better position to grow. But the failure that I made was checking out the culture in that firm. I thought I had done it. But after we merged and literally moved out of our offices, moved into their offices in downtown Grand Rapids, it was clear that their culture, which was led by a dictator, was very different than our culture. And our staff bristled at this new leadership. I bristled at this new leadership because it wasn't leadership in the way that you and I have been talking about it today, Henry.
Right.
So we, unfortunately, had written into our agreement the option to leave within 12 months. So at 9 months, I gave notice that we were going to demerge and go back to being our own firm. And the boss said, yeah, okay, that's fine. And then he filed suit after I did that, and with all kinds of trumped-up charges of this and that and some dozen or dozen and a half complaints on a large dollar amount that he was suing me for. And I thought, well, I admit that I made a mistake doing this in the first place. I thought it was good to go back. But maybe the easiest way to get rid of this lawsuit would be just to go back. And I knew he was interested in having us come back into the firm, just reemerge and make the best of it. And, and he was older than I was, and hoped that there would be a change in leadership and I could convince him to operate differently. But as soon as I proposed that to my staff, their reaction was, you lived with the snake. Why would you go back and live with the snake again? This is now, it might make the lawsuit go away. It might make your life easier, but you're not serving us by doing that. This guy does not have morals and integrity. So if you've got the guts to stand up for what you believe and represent us for what we believe, then we should just stay and take our lumps and get the lawsuit settled and move on. So I did that. I wasn't sure which way to go, but I listened to the staff and decided that I should do that. Otherwise, I would just lose all credibility and really wouldn't be able to live with myself. It turned out to be a great decision. We settled the lawsuit for a very small amount. We grew rapidly after that. We were so fired up to get out and do things and fulfill the mission that we had established. And pretty soon we were bigger than they were. And that firm today is just a little blip on the radar screen.
Interesting, Rick, about this. And I would reflect on that too. Like, sometimes my moments of failure are the launching for that next level of impact. Why is that?
Well, first of all, I think it gives you an opportunity to reflect, to really think about
like
what you just
you
went through. Who do you stand for? What am I? What do I stand for? What are my what are my core values? And secondly, I mean, it gives you that the opportunity, but also you list. Hopefully, you sit down and you list the lessons that you learned from that, so that you won't go back and do the same
thing again. What do they say? Like, you know, like to be teachable and really not repeat the same mistakes.
And that's what I learned from that one, was was learning from those mistakes, and our staff did as well.
That's pretty amazing. Okay, one more question. Your faith, your walk with the Lord. What role has that played in all your enterprises?
I have been blessed. I've been blessed by family with a wife, two great kids, now five grandchildren. Just wonderful blessings flow from what the Lord has provided to me in my family. I've been blessed with success in business. I've batted more than 51%, or maybe a little better than 51%. I've been blessed with good health. I look back and try not to take for granted all of those blessings. It's too easy to take it for granted as you're going along. But as I reflect back on it now that I'm semi-retired, I look at all those blessings that have been provided to me, and still probably take it somewhat. I don't give thanks enough for what the Lord has provided to me.
So in a lot of ways, it comes down to that attitude of gratitude. And when you have that, it does change your world, because, you know, nothing's ever perfect. No family's ever perfect. No business is ever perfect. No enterprise or church is ever perfect. No ministry is ever perfect. But if you sort of have that faith-energized gratitude, like, Lord, everything I am and who I am is a gift from you, it does change how you look at everything, doesn't it?
It does. And overall, I think early on we all learned the golden rule, probably when we were kids. And that golden rule really permeates all religions in different forms, but
different
it's still the same. And that's if I had to point to one thing that was important to me, the one thing that stood out, that kept coming to my to my mind is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I lost sight of that sometimes along the way, but after I shot myself in the foot a few times, and I would look back and that, well, stupid, you weren't paying attention to the golden rule.
Yeah, and again, that transcends all denominational religious expressions. As Jesus said, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I mean, that's interesting. That's, again, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. That's wow. Well, I want to thank you, Rick. I mean, this has been tremendous. And I, just talking to you, have looked at my own life. It is fascinating when wisdom is presented. As you listen to it, I kept thinking, okay, oh, what about CLI? What about students? What about my own family? So I love that feeling when someone comes here and in you, the authentic journey of Enterprise, and to share your piece of that. Do you have anything to conclude as we kind of end our presentation today?
I don't think so, Henry. I wanted to conclude with the golden rule, because if there's one thing that, if you only take away one thing from what we talked about today, just don't lose sight of the golden rule.
To
I think
love.
I should, that's all I really have to add.
Good. Thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure,
I look
Henry.
Forward to what God is going to do in your semi-retirement years
you.
As you lead others for His glory.
As well for CLI.
Thank you.